Support comes from the St. Louis Chamber Chorus. Season 68 concludes at John Burroughs at 3 p.m. on May 26th with the United Nations commissioned Voices of Today by composer Benjamin Britten, featuring youth and adult singers. Tickets at chamberchorus.org.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. Missouri is set to execute Brian Dorsey on April 9th. The Jefferson City native pleaded guilty to murdering Sarah and Benjamin Bonney near their new Bloomfield house in 2006. There is no question that Dorsey murdered his cousin and her husband. But an unusual group of people are calling on Governor Mike Parson to commute his sentence. That includes dozens of corrections officers who know Dorsey, a former Missouri Supreme Court judge, and several state GOP lawmakers. Joining us now is one of those legislators, State Representative Tony Lovasco. The St. Charles County Republican signed a letter calling for Parson to commute Dorsey's sentence to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Representative Lovasco, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you for having me.
You were one of three Republicans to send a letter to Governor Parson calling for Dorsey's commutation. What prompted you to do that?
Well, I've been a longstanding opponent of the death penalty for a variety of reasons, but this case is specifically calling out the egregiousness of the use of this practice. Here we have somebody who pled guilty. They took responsibility for what it was that they did, but they did so in a way that did not benefit them whatsoever. He was represented by public defenders who were paid a flat fee, whether they won or lost, and they recommended to him that he plead guilty without even requesting that the death penalty be taken off the table. That's insane. Why on earth would anyone in their right mind do that? And I think it demonstrates very clearly that the system is very well geared against the person that is defending themselves. We've got a situation here where someone had every reason to go to trial. He had evidence to suggest that he was under a drug-induced psychosis when this happened. He did not necessarily meet all the elements of the crime that was being charged of him. But he never even presented that defense and instead pled guilty with the death penalty on the table. He was then convicted of this act, sentenced to death by a jury. And now since then, five of those jurors that sentenced him to death have said, well, we got it wrong. This is a clear case that the governor should step in and say, you know what? No, we're not going to kill this guy.
Well, we'll get into each of those points in a minute, but our listeners may be surprised to hear there are Republicans in Missouri that are against the death penalty. There's always been a block of GOP lawmakers who have felt this way. But what do you think prompts Republicans like you to stray from the party orthodoxy on this issue?
I would argue, actually, the folks that are supporting the death penalty are probably straying from the party orthodoxy. The Republican Party, especially in Missouri, is a conservative party. We believe in small government. We believe in fiscal responsibility. And we're pro-life. The death penalty is none of those things. Quite frankly, the idea that we're going to suggest that something that costs, 10 to 20 times as much as life in prison without parole is fiscally responsible, that's kind of laughable, right? It's certainly not small government to decide whether someone lives or dies. That's not a small government principle. And I think it's pretty self-evident that, ending someone's life is not a pro-life position. So while I understand the need for justice and the emotional desire for vengeance, the death penalty, quite frankly, is just not a conservative principle in my mind, and I oppose it.
So let's go through some of the arguments for commuting his sentence that you mentioned. So you mentioned the fact that his two public defenders were paid a flat fee. And the Missouri Supreme Court, when they rejected a lot of the arguments around commutation, they rejected it on technical grounds that I think are a little too complicated to go in on a public radio show. But pushing that aside, couldn't it be argued that these attorneys were going to have a difficult time, no matter what, of trying to prevent a capital murder, given that Dorsey admitted that he killed his cousin and her husband, and also it seemed like some of his actions, which we'll get into in a minute, seemed to show deliberateness, which is often key when deciding on whether to pursue capital punishment or not.
Well, sure. I think that certainly the outcome of the case as it's proceeded through the legal system is not necessarily surprising. Anytime you plead guilty, you're taking a lot of the tools off the table that you can use to advocate for yourself throughout the process. So again, I think that goes right back to what legitimate counsel would ever advise their client to do that before the trial's even started, before they've even had an opportunity to present their case. I think that's just very frustrating that that's just the start of the story and quite frankly, how it's likely to end.
So let's talk about the fact that his attorneys are pointing out that he was in a drug-induced psychosis at the time. Going back to that recent Missouri Supreme Court decision, they have rejected that argument, and they said that Dorsey's actions, including how he loaded a shotgun to kill Ben and Sarah Bonnie and how he stole their property in order to sell that to presumably pay off a drug debt, shows, quote, he cannot establish a freestanding claim of actual innocence. Where do you think the Missouri Supreme Court got it wrong there?
I haven't read their decision. I would say based on that statement, you know, perhaps they didn't get it wrong. Their requirement there is to demonstrate whether or not the appellate has made a claim of actual innocence, which is not that argument, right? The argument there is that he didn't meet all of the legal requirements of what he was being convicted of, which is first-degree murder, and that perhaps a more appropriate penalty would have been a second-degree murder or something similar. I think that's different than, you know, he didn't do it. I think it's pretty clear he did it, right? I mean, he's admitting that. And so, again, I think the appellate process, the process as it moves through the court system, you know, it's not designed to be a complete adjudication of all the facts. It's designed to review specific parts of the process. And so you're very limited as to what you can argue in those cases.
So let's also talk about how there is an unusual coalition asking for his commutation. I mentioned you and several of your Republican colleagues, but there's also been a lot of focus on how dozens of corrections officers have attested to Dorsey's character. And that includes the fact that he's been a barber to the prison's wardens. Why do you think that type of testimony is compelling in this situation?
I think it's interesting because a lot of those folks are not against the death penalty, right? You know, when someone like myself comes out and calls for commutation, you know, I recognize that it doesn't carry as much weight because I don't like the death penalty at all. But when you've got folks that are very much in favor of capital punishment saying, well, normally we'd be all about this, but not in this case. To me, that's very compelling because that demonstrates that they think there's really something special about this situation that deserves review.
And there are some family members who have asked Governor Parson to grant Dorsey a commutation, but there are some clear divisions here. Jacob Bonnie, who is Ben Bonnie's brother, told the Riverfront Times that he was shocked by the details around his brother and sister-in-law's murders. He also said that Dorsey, quote, backstabbed people who were trying to help him. What do you make of these comments from some of the family members of the people who were murdered here?
I mean, I can't claim to know the details of the case sufficiently to argue one way or the other there. I can say it's perfectly understandable that folks that knew and were related to the victims would have opposing views and would want to see Mr. Dorsey put to death. That's certainly something that I think everyone can understand. It doesn't change the situation, though.
Yeah, and for full disclosure to you and our listeners, the reason why this caught my attention, this particular execution, is because I covered these murders as a reporter for the Columbia Daily Tribune in 2006. I didn't talk with any of the family members, but I did talk with the neighbors of the Bonnies, people that worked with them, people that, like, knew them in the community. And I could see the side of some of Dorsey's family members who would argue that his good behavior in prison does not make up for the fact that he left the Bonnie's daughter without parents or betrayed the Bonnie's trust. What would you say to the idea that, like, the argument about him being rehabilitated does not really undo the lifelong trauma for people that loved Sarah and Benjamin Bonnie?
I think that's absolutely fair. I think it's very common in these situations when you're talking about a death penalty case and you're fighting to commute someone's sentence to lean very heavily on what you think the person has done since their crime to demonstrate that they're not the same person. That makes sense. It's a very emotional appeal that I think it resonates with some people. You can't expect it to resonate with the folks that were directly victimized, right? They don't probably care all that much about someone's rehabilitation because they're still hurting. I understand that completely. I don't minimize that. But I think it's important that we focus on the technical aspects of the case and the criminal justice system and really how this fits into public policy at large, because that's really what we should be focusing on, not necessarily the emotional impact of a particular scenario.
So Governor Parson's spokesperson told me that, quote, Governor Parson and his legal team are in the process of reviewing Mr. Dorsey's clemency petition. He'll likely announce his decision, I would assume, on Monday, because by tradition, the governor has usually announced whether he will, like, commute a sentence about 24 hours before it happens. First of all, have you talked with any of the governor's staff about this particular request for commutation?
I haven't. I never even got an acknowledgement that they received my letter. I found out that they did in the media. So, the governor's staff is focused on an insane number of different factors. We're going through the budget crisis right now in the House. I recognize that this is not probably high on their list of things to be focusing on, but the reality is the clock is ticking and we're running out of time. I know that it's tradition to wait to the last minute. I don't understand why. I think that just drags it out for everyone, and that's not right. I think they should make a decision and they should get back to people.
Do you think that the message that you're trying to convey, as well as all these other people we've talked about, and we didn't even mention the fact that former Missouri Judge Michael Wolf, who was on St. Louis on the Air earlier this week, is also calling for his commutation. Do you think that this chorus of people calling for his commutation will get through to the governor?
Oh, I'm sure he'll be briefed on everything. I'm sure he'll be given the letters. Whether or not that weighs in on his decision, I honestly don't know. I can't imagine being in his position and having to make what is literally a life and death decision and the stress and weight that must put on you. Quite frankly, it's easy for me because I would just commute them all because I'm against the death penalty. But for someone like Governor Parson, who very much favors capital punishment, having to make an exception to what he would consider the normal rule, it must be difficult. And so I get that he has to take it seriously and he has to consider all of the evidence and all of the factors in favor of commutation. So I have faith that he'll make the right decision.
Well, I know, at least from a secondhand account, that he does take this seriously. I read through Parson's biography, No Turning Back, this past weekend, and there were a number of notable passages about how Parson often agonizes over death penalty cases. And he does see the power of rehabilitation, partially because it talks in the book about how he made a lot of mistakes as a youth that got him kind of in trouble with the law. But since he's become governor, I don't recall him commuting any death sentences. So are you concerned that this situation is really not going to deviate from what he has done since he's become governor?
The statistics would suggest that, sure. There is also, of course, a political component that you can't ignore. There has been countless cases where a governor has commuted a sentence, something has happened, someone's offended again, that sort of thing. Obviously, that's not applicable in a life without parole scenario. But of course, anytime you're reducing someone's sentence, you're kind of taking on any actions that they might take after that as a potential political hit to your future. But quite frankly, that's not applicable here, right? The governor's retiring. He's not running for president. He's not going off to do something else. He doesn't need to worry about the political ramifications of his decision, and he can focus solely on what's right. Not to say he hasn't done that in the past cases, but I think there's a certain clarity that comes with leaving the office that I hope will help to guide him here.
During a previous episode of the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air, we spent a lot of time analyzing a poll from St. Louis University and YouGov, and it found that 62% of respondents favor using the death penalty in cases of first-degree murder. Are you surprised by those numbers, and what do you think would need to happen for a position like yours to become more accepted in public polling like that?
I think, unfortunately, we just have to have something very egregious happen. I think that the tide turns the moment we have someone who is executed that is later found completely innocent without a shadow of a doubt, someone that's a sympathetic person that people can relate to and resonate with. If we ever have a situation where someone can think, you know what, this could be me, I could be in that situation, it could be my loved one that's being put to death when they didn't commit a crime, I think that's what turns the tide. I think the unfortunate reality is cases like Mr. Dorsey's are not going to move the needle because, I mean, he did do it, right? It's not nearly as sympathetic of a case that most people are going to need to change their position on such a core issue. So we've got a lot of work to do, quite frankly.
You're not the only person who signed this letter. There were, I think, a Representative Chad Perkins of Pike County and I believe Representative Jim Murphy of South St. Louis County. Have you talked with your other Republican colleagues about your collective opposition to the death penalty? And what has been kind of your, if you have, if the answer is no, then I guess this question isn't really applicable. But if you have, like, what has kind of been some of those conversations that you've been able to have?
You know, I have. So last year, I made an amendment to the during the budget process to defund capital punishment throughout the state. We asked for a roll call vote, and we got 18 Republicans voting for that measure. And there were some surprising names, folks that I hadn't had the conversation with previously that came up. And I went to many of them and thanked them for their vote. And we did have some chats. And the one thing that I kept hearing time after time was, how can I put on my flyers? How can I go door to door that I'm 100% pro-life and sign on to the government killing someone? I just can't do that. I just heard that from multiple people. And I think that's really what's ultimately driving a lot of folks is that pro-life nature that really so many Republicans have.
Yeah, I've actually encountered some legislators who are not necessarily Republicans, but I do remember, this was before your time in the legislature, Democratic State Representative Paul Quinn, who was very much opposed to abortion rights, was also very opposed to the death penalty as well. But as you kind of alluded to, not everybody takes that view. I think there's a situation where people are against abortion rights and for the death penalty. Do you see that as inherently contradictory? Because from my recollection, I don't even think like Missouri Right to Life like judges somebody if they're for the death penalty, but against abortion rights.
Right. It's not even on their survey. They're neutral to it. I think it's a contradiction. I would argue we either, you know, value life and believe that the one of the purposes of government is to protect it or we don't. Now, you can argue whether or not an unborn baby is a life or not. I think there's a lot of folks that take the opposite position that I do there. But, you know, the reality is if you're going to argue that it is important to outlaw abortion in order to save life, I think it is incredibly important to recognize that if you're also enabling government to take a life in a premeditated fashion, not in the defense of others or in a necessary moment, you're a little bit hypocritical there. And I don't think it's intentional, and I certainly understand the emotional side of it and why people get to that position. But I think we should strive to be better than that and be consistent in our positions as much as we can.
Have you talked with any of the three Republicans who are running to succeed Parson about their stances on capital punishment?
You know, I've not had that opportunity. I've talked to them about a variety of other issues, but that particular thing has not come up in the limited time we've had a chat.
State Representative Tony Labosco is a Republican lawmaker from St. Charles County. He was one of several GOP legislators who want Governor Mike Parson to commute Brian Dorsey's sentence before he's executed on April 9th. Representative Labosco, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This episode was produced by Jason Rosenbaum.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
St. Louis on the Air proudly supports local artists by using music from Life Creative Group.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news from the St. Louis region and across Missouri. It also includes stories from the Illinois side of the river and our Metro East reporter, Will Bauer.
In Alton, in Belleville, in East St. Louis, in Edwardsville, in Cahokia Heights, at Scott Air Force Base, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listen to reports from Will and all of our journalists weekdays on the Gateway, on the STLPR app, and wherever you get podcasts.